Okay, good morning, everybody. We are now starting the public part of our meeting. And the first topic on our agenda is leases. We'll start with a short update by Katrina on behalf of the ISB. And then we'll give the floor to Françoise, I suppose, for the discussion of the paper that the EVEC staff has produced. Katrina.
Yes, good morning. So I'll just give you, as Hans said, a very brief update on where we are on the project. So since we last spoke to you in June, the boards have continued to re-deliberate the proposals in the 2013 ED. So in June and July, the boards reached decisions on subleases, on sale and leaseback transactions, on presentation, on the balance sheet and cash flow statement, and also on lessor disclosures. So that means, in terms of re-deliberations, we are substantially complete. In saying that, of course, there still are some important topics and decisions still to be reached. So, for example, we still need to discuss lessee disclosures, transition, an effective date, obviously very important. And we also plan to bring back papers on the small asset lease exemption and also on the definition of a lease. We published a project update in August, which we've circulated to you, and that really was just a means of communicating some of the important decisions taken to date, and in particular to try and explain some of the reasons behind those decisions. And of course, we're also interested in the additional consultation that's happening in Europe and following that. So with that, that's all I intend to say on the update. I'm happy to take any questions on that. Or
any questions? If not, I'll give the floor to Françoise to introduce her paper.
Thank you, Hans. I think everybody will remember, in fact, the last discussion that we had in this meeting, in this group, around leases. And you heard from, more particularly from Europe, if I remember well, that there were still concerns remaining with the boundary between leases and services. And this was not to be seen as being in contradiction with positions around the project so far. It was really a message that has come across since the beginning. So to help get some discussion further, and it was during the summer, so EFOC staff was encouraged, in fact, to see whether there would be a basis to formulate for some further thinking as to how the boundary could be set in a better place. And this is the paper that has been prepared for this meeting, and I really have to emphasize what is in the disclaimer in the paper, which is that it is an EFOC staff paper. It is meant to support discussion, but it's not to be seen as an EFOC position. Patrina referred to the supplementary survey that we run also during the summer, and we did that in coordination with the national standard setters. This supplementary survey was meant, in fact, to seek views from constituents on the issue of the ISB and FSB reaching two different models. And also to investigate further where people would think the boundary should be set, also in a better place to try to bring some more input into that discussion also. And this survey culminated, in fact, in a roundtable that was held on 15th of September, so recently, and we were very pleased with the attendance from Europe, but also more particularly with the attendance of both ISB and FSB in that roundtable. So that was some good further debate discussion. And out of this survey, frankly, what you get is that views are split, as they have been quite since the beginning. We had also, so the survey addressed not only preparers, it also addressed users. And we also got feedback from users, and that's reflected in the paper around this issue of where to set the boundary between leases and services. So I think it's worth mentioning, I think Anna did that also at a point in time, I think we mentioned that there is still, and in fact people took the opportunity as a survey to indicate again that when it is the case, that they would support a different approach than the approach that both boards are taking of recognizing lease liabilities. So that took that opportunity again. I guess I should mention that it's been signed, but it was not the focus of the survey that we had launched. And so, if I come to this staff paper, basically, what the paper does is to say, well, we consistently with the objective that the board has set to themselves, which is to provide a better representation, a more faithful representation of the leverage of an entity, and recognizing that leases is a source of financing, then there should be, in the way you characterize the lease, a reference to the arrangement being, in fact, a financing arrangement. It's not a new element, and yes, that's something that I should be saying. Is that, you know, the staff in bringing this paper has built on a lot of discussions internally, externally, also among staff of national standards. So if you don't like the ideas in the paper, you should not blame FRAC staff only, but if you like them, you should not praise FRAC staff only. So this financing arrangement is the first element. And in the paper, what is developed around this financing arrangement is that if a lease liability is akin to some borrowing, basically you should be in the same position contractually as a borrower would be in a simple borrowing arrangement, which is to have to repay capital and pay interest no matter what. No, so that these payments, this obligation to repay, couldn't be subject to the supplier in the arrangement providing performance on other obligations than just the delivery of the asset. When you get there, immediately, in fact, you refer to that supplier having other obligations to you. And eventually the payment and whether the obligation is conditional or not to these other services being provided or not. So basically you come very quickly into considering arrangements that include and services. And so the question and the second angle that this paper is taken is to look, in fact, as whether before jumping into the separation between a lease component and other elements in an arrangement, whether at the level of the arrangement itself there shouldn't be a different basis to decide whether you unbundle or you don't unbundle. And the point that is made is to look at the distinction, how to separate performance obligations in the revenue recognition standard that has just been published, with the notion of whether goods and services are distinct. That's how it is done in IFS 15. And so the recommendation is to look whether this criteria could apply. In considering whether there is in fact an interrelationship between providing the asset and the related services, or whether they could be considered as separate goods and services. So that's basically, I think, I hope I've not misportrayed, and I provide my apologies to FRAC staff if I've not presented the paper well enough. but I think that's what the paper suggests. I think we saw in the survey that setting the boundary in a better place remains a very high concern in Europe, and I'm happy to hear Petrina say that as part of the work that is laying ahead, the definition release should be considered again. So on that basis, I'm happy that the discussion started. You agree to that?
Okay. I open the floor. Who would like to start? Angus.
I guess just broadly in terms of the EFRAG paper, we don't agree with what you've got in paragraph 34 of the paper, and that's the really focusing on leases just as a financing arrangement. We think the asset perspective is just as important, so we're reasonably happy with where the ISB has landed. In terms of your second point, I think we broadly agree that lining up the componentry requirements with IFRS 15 would be a good idea for consistency across IFRS.
Lining up what?
Unbundling, identifying the various components.
Joint service and...
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
That's good. I just ask Angus, sorry, just a quick question. If you line it up, and if that means that you can't achieve unbundling as under the revenue, what would you do with the contract? Which way would you go?
I mean, I guess I hadn't thought this through too far, but I guess I'd go with a predominance type test, perhaps.
Clement?
Thank you. On the unbundling part, which was mentioned by Francoise, I think some of our local constituents are also very concerned about that. And in fact, I think one of them actually has written to Petrina recently. I guess the perception out there, right, is that if the leases project is trying to sort out, you know, the unrecording of assets and liability in the past, then financing arrangement is one of the major concerns that people should be looking at. And but right now, if we look at, you know, sort of contract which actually contained surface element, particularly, you know, leases, property leases, for the big retailers, I think most of the time they're saying that it's not a financing arrangement to them. And particularly, you know, the front loading of the interest element on the P&L recording, that bit really, you know, sort of bothers them. And I think, so going back to the unbundling comment made by the EFRAG paper, we can see some support, you know, on that part.
But Clement, just to follow up on your real estate example, are they getting a right of use asset? I mean, I know they're getting services as well, and we need to think about the unbundling. But are they getting an asset, a right of use asset, when they sign the lease?
With the recent analysis coming out from 15. The right of use and the right of access to the asset is clearly, you know, sort of defined and deliberated. So I guess maybe on that part, more sort of reference should be made to the 15 as well.
But I think you're saying they are getting a right of use asset, and then are they paying for it up front, or do they owe some money?
No, most of the time they're paying it over the lease term.
That's right. So they've got an asset and they haven't paid for it. To me, that's a financing arrangement.
Grossing up on the balance sheet doesn't bother. It's the front loading of the interest element.
The profit and loss.
Yeah.
Okay. Kim?
Thanks, Hans. Yeah, I think on the financing side, I mean, just what Ian said is certainly my view as well, that if you... by the fact that there is a right of use that's given to the lessee on day one, and they're not paying up front for that, there's a financing transaction. So I don't think that we should be looking at whether or not there is a financing element to determine whether or not there is a lease. I think we need to look at what is a lease, being the transfer of the right of use, and if that is transferred on day one and the lessee doesn't pay for it up front, you have a financing transaction. I'm not supportive of the financing part of the paper. On the service versus lease, I do think that it's a critical point, and I support looking at the control of the asset as being the distinguishing factor. So if the lessee or the customer controls the use of the asset, then I think it's a lease. Obviously, if the supplier does, well, then I think it's a service. And I also support unbundling. I think one needs to make sure that you're accounting for all the right elements. Otherwise, I think there are lots of structuring opportunities to bundle lots of things together and achieve a particular outcome, whereas it could have been structured differently to achieve a different outcome. So for me, yeah, I really think that it needs to be clear what a lease is. And yeah, that might mean that some contracts currently should be accounted for as leases, even though that's perhaps not what lots of users or lots of preparers want. Perhaps the users want it, but perhaps the preparers don't.
Okay, I understand in South Africa it's quite common for a lease to be paid in full up front.
Well, for some leases.
So in that situation, you haven't got a financing arrangement because you've got a right of use asset and you've paid for it, but you'd still say that's a lease.
I would, because it goes back to being a lease being the right to use an asset. Whether or not you've paid up front or you haven't paid, to me doesn't change the fact that you've got a right of use. Yeah, I mean, it just raises an interesting thing, for example, under IFRS 15, that even if you've paid up front, you need to impute interest, as in the sense that you've now paid in advance. Or in this case, I suppose maybe you haven't paid in advance because you've received the right. So maybe in that case, there actually is no imputing of interest then, I guess. Yeah.
Michelle.
First of all, I appreciate the paper prepared by the IFRAG, and we think that we look at the definition of contract of the lease is very important for the standards. And first, my point to whether we should include to change the, or to include a financial arrangement in form of contract. In the definition, I think we should be very cautious, because I agree with that leases provide some kind of source of financing, but if we change the term to financing, a lease is a financing arrangement, maybe it's too strict, because most people, if they got the lease contract, some cases they just based on the lease get the use of the assets, not too strictly look at the finance arrangement, and they don't think it's really there is a formal financing contract or arrangement there. Secondly, because the board has decided the different treatment of lessee and lessor, if we look at the lessor side, we still have two classification of the leases. One is financing leases, another is operating leases. So if we change the term, the lease of the lease to a financing arrangement, how can we explain to the operating leases from lesser side whether they are really leases? Yeah. So I believe that we should be very cautious to change the term at this cases. And the third point I would like to raise is that how to clearly define the lease term between the use of rights and the use of assets and the service. In some cases, it's quite confusion if we look at the current definition. For example, Now, in order to decrease the emissions, China different cities are trying to establish different establish public bicycle leasing companies to provide the bicycles for the public. And the contract said that if the citizen they lease the bicycle in the first hour, it's free of charge. The citizen do not necessary to pay the money. But the contract said that it's a lease. It's a lease. But if we look at the term of the current definition, it clearly said that for a lease, it should be finally it should be in change some kind of consideration. In this case, there is no consideration there, but for the lease companies or for the citizen, and for the contract name, it shows that the lease. But from another point, from government point, because it's supported by the government. Government said that actually they provide public service to the citizen, and some citizens also see this kind of bicycle leases is a kind of public service they receive. So in this case, I think we should clearly define the definition, how to distinguish the real lease or the service in this case.
Roger.
I'm wondering, I support the point, and maybe we should try to harmonize the accounting policy and lease standards as well as IFRS 15.
Roger.
I think one has to worry about circular arguments. Under the leasing standard, something is a right of use asset, therefore, by definition, it must be financing. And I think this paper is trying to get at financing as a guide to is it a lease in the first place. And I think we come back to areas where we've previously expressed concerns, which is about assets which are used to deliver a service. And the real question is, it's quite a large asset involved, there's quite a long contract providing these services, is that therefore a right of use asset, and therefore should that appear on the balance sheet of the company receiving the service? And so I do agree with this paper that I think financing as an intent is a good way of helping to decide that. I also am concerned about bifurcation. I think the problem with the current proposals is they're quite complex, and the default option is always to the whole thing as a lease. And in some of the examples we've talked about before, it's by no means clear that they are really leases, and it seems to me that the default option may be better to call them a service.
Roger, on the financing, how would you address the paid up front right of use asset? Because there's no financing, it's not a lease? Or
those aren't the sort of things that retail stores, not the sort of things I have concern about. This, in my view, that will be a lease. This is not a way of providing a substantial service.
You'd have to say that financing is not a necessary part for it to be a lease.
I think looking at the intention, and this is more where you have a service contract, and people always talk about drilling rigs, for example, where you're providing substantial people and expertise as well as the asset. Now, you could have a two-year drilling rig contract. I suppose in rare circumstances you might pay up front. I don't know whether people normally would pay up front or why they would. But then you have other executive contracts where you pay up front.
My major concern with this proposal, which is of course not fully developed, but I think if you look, for example, on page 6, 25B, where it says, well, you know, an indication of it being a service is that the supplier continues to be significantly and actively involved in the operation. I think this would rule out a lot of current finance leases, capital leases, from being it would make them off balance sheet relative to their current treatment. For example, I had a visit from a Dutch company who builds these mobile refineries or floating refineries. They will continue to deliver service during the operation, 20-year operation of these refineries. Huge capital investment with huge financing, but also, yes, delivery of services. With this definition, they would go out. It would, so even from the present situation, I think there will be a decrease of on balance sheet treatment of leases. So I find this very problematic. Again, it's not a fully developed proposal, but there are so many lease contracts that have a mingling with services. A lot of retail building leases have some elements of services. My concern is that with this definition, which is also a very different definition from what we have now, I think it would also necessitate another exposure. I think it would be very easy to circumvent on balance sheet treatment of leases.
Yeah, it suggests a lot of form over substance, really. But there's got to be explicit referral to a finance arrangement. I don't know that the arrangement has to be explicit to be there.
Sue?
I was going to raise some similar points to what Hans and Ian have just raised, but I guess we do talk about financing, but I think we mean it in a quite a simple sense of payments over time. So I guess one of my concerns would be whether we would need the complexity of these types of references. And I would also be a little bit concerned that some things that, like long-term property leases, which may well be finance leases today, are unlikely to have these types of terms in them, but I don't know that we would have wanted them not to be considered leases anymore. Also, the idea of having a different outcome depending on the business model of the lessor, when the contract is identical for the lessee, I'm not sure that I would agree with that. What I do agree with is that we need to improve the focus on making sure that we really do only capture the piece of a contract if there's multiple things going on that relates to the right of use asset. And I think some of the ideas in here on building on some of the concepts in IFRS 15 are helpful and things where we could put in extra work and maybe guidance to help people with ensuring the separation is done properly, which I think is what sort of things we've been trying to work on. But I am a little bit concerned about this idea that if it's too hard to do it, that there should be a presumption that you're out of scope. I do, on the other hand, understand that if the payments were very, very much dominated by the services, why people might be concerned about it being swept into the lease accounting. So maybe something where, the vast majority of the payments were to do with the services and rather than the right of use or something like that would be something we could look at. But also, we don't want to create incentives for people to say it's just too hard. Therefore, it's not a lease and I'm out of the standard. So we need to be careful, I think.
Françoise?
Well, thank you for having this discussion because it brings a lot of input. I would like, in fact, to go back to two issues. First of all, there has been in discussion here a lot of focus about, how the financing arrangement, from financing arrangement is jumped to financing component. And maybe the main idea that was behind this notion was more to do with the unconditionality of payment than anything else. When the ISB says the supplier has delivered the assets, as a result, the supplier has performed under the contract, and now it's the obligation of the customer to pay. And you would consider a contract in which, in fact, the payments are subject to the services component being performed, then you can no longer isolate the obligation, the financial obligation, and consider that this is really due, since it is in fact dependent in its it's dependent on the services being provided, and the idea was not either, the way I understand it, to take a whole bunch of contracts out of the scope. It's to, in fact, to acknowledge the fact that there is in this arrangement a lot of variety, a lot of different arrangements, and maybe getting a bit more insight. This should be done, and it's, we need to have in mind that when we say distinguish between leases and services, we also say basically distinguish between leases and executory contracts. And in those executory contracts, often you have a financial liability that is already there. So this kind of distinction that is being made. The other discussion that has arisen is whether, you know, this would be a too big a change to the definition of a lease. Frankly, I don't know whether the issue is the definition of a lease or whether it's the scope of the recognition. It would need to be seen what is the best way of acknowledging all these differences and where it is best to put them. We said definition of a lease because basically in the project where you are today, it's the definition of a lease that makes the scope. But so we, in everything that is being discussed, we try to remain as, because we see that as, in fact, refinements in the final deliberations. We don't see that as being, you know, going through the whole project again all over. And finally, the comment I would like to make is that I don't think that an idea should be rejected because of some possible outcomes. Because you could, in some of the project, you could wonder whether the leverage is not a better characteristics of the entity that provides the services. And in being in that type of service provision, type of business, has to involve a lot of assets. So I'm not sure that, you know, I would jump to a particular conclusion just because of a particular outcome in a particular contract.
Well, I would be very much concerned if, I mean, what we are trying to achieve with this with these proposals is that the current situation where, you could read in the newspapers about a big company in the UK that has run into accounting trouble. And something that is perfectly legitimate in their accounting is that they have huge off-balance sheets leases. The whole purpose of this proposal is to bring them on the balance sheet because of the elements of financing in these leases. If the end result would be that just stick in some services with the leases contract. And they're a bit hard to separate, and the outcome is that they remain off balance sheet, or that actually existing finance leases that are currently on the balance sheet. And I gave an example of one which clearly has a commingling of a vast capital investment with also substantial services. If that would go off balance sheet, then that would be a disastrous outcome of this project.
But I don't think it's even a more or less question. I think what we're saying is that there would be a risk that there would be cases where we would all probably have otherwise been pretty clear that there really is a right of use and a commitment to make payments over time, but just because of the form of the agreement not looking like a loan or the nature of the lessor, we'd be saying actually no, it doesn't meet these criteria, so no, it's out. So we would have all been confident it was a right of use, there were payment obligations over time, but we could get a different outcome. I think that was more what we were getting at, rather than, you know, things are going off there, so therefore by definition it's bad.
Thank you.
Lizzo?
Russ,
sorry.
Was that your intent? The point about the business model of the lessor, I read as, if you are a bank, it's an indicator that you aren't providing a service, and therefore it's probably a lease, because banks that provide the financing for the oil rig don't have the competency to actually do the service. So I viewed it as not so much of a of a form-driven, of a substantive argument that banks that lease cars aren't going to maintain the cars because they just don't have that capability. I did pause a little bit on the manufacturer dealer one, but that I thought that's what you're getting at, was it was an indicator, it wasn't a form-driven, but was that what you were...
In the paper, the way I read it, I mean, the staff has put some possible indicators, but certainly not anything like criteria that you are here or there. In fact, it's really looking behind, I mean, I think it's getting in far better into the substance than what is done at present.
Liesl?
Katrina.
No, go ahead.
We seem to be circling a number of issues, and we are not really, I think, at the point where we, except for talking about the scope and therefore all the definition and therefore about the scope, but this goes all over the place, going to the lessor again, going to the lessee again. Of course, for a standard setter, it's always difficult if you don't want to do the fundamental. And you cannot always do the fundamental. And I was sort of thinking, how much further have we taken it from IFRIC 4? IFRIC 4 has been put into place, obviously, by the number a number of years ago, and it has always been relatively controversial. It has caught a few more, I think, than we had in before there was IFRIC 4, although the standard was obviously the same, because after all, it's only an interpretation. And I think we're circling still between real estate and non-real estate, because equipment, then someone comes up with that example, then someone comes up with the real estate again. And obviously there is still so much imagination for different models that it, to me at least, signals a great discomfort with it all. And I think we still have to move away a bit of fog to see the end outcome. This is not very helpful, this is not very technical, however, we ain't home and dry yet.
Well, I think there will remain a lot of people blowing fog. I think this is simply such a sensitive issue. Stephen?
I was interested in Russ's interpretation, because I read it differently. I read it that if you're not a bank, if the lessor is not a bank, then it's not a lease. That if the lessor is a property company, the intention is not providing finance, therefore it's not a lease.
And maybe first of all, it's a staff paper. It was there to support discussion, so it's certainly not a finished product of any kind. And second, I think these were kind of indicators, and certainly not bright lines of any sort.
So under what circumstances would a property lease be a lease?
Lessee or lessor?
I'm confused.
Lessee or lessor or both?
For the lessee. So when would property lease be classified as a lease?
That's the problem. When you come to that kind of area, it's very, very, very tricky. I mean, you know, it can vary from a shop on the street level to a service counter in a department store and a unit in the shopping mall. And then the risk of the asset. Actually, a lot of people taking out leases is because, you know, the maintenance of that property belongs to the landlord and they don't want to know about it. So to them, it's like a surface, you know.
So what about our lease on this floor? Is it a lease? Because the lessor is not a bank, I don't think they are. And if the lifts don't work, we'll stop paying the lease payments until they're fixed, let's say. So it seems to me that rules it out as being a lease under these proposals. If there's any conditionality, it's not a lease.
I don't think the landlord, whether it's a bank or not, is that critical. I think if you quote your example for this, I think it's a lease. But when you talk about, you know, retailers having a service counter in department store, I think it's more than the space that they're looking for. It's also the environment, the situation that the department store create, so that they could carry out their retailing business, and in itself, it's kind of a surface as well. rather than just leasing out the space in the department store, if you know what I mean, Steve.
Daryl?
Just listening to Clement's answer, and to I actually raised my tent earlier just to ask Roger a question, but listening to the discussion, I'm wondering, particularly after Roger's answer to Ian's question about if you had two identical leases, one paid over time and one paid up front, would you want to treat the assets differently? And it seemed to me you then sort of said, well, you actually might want to treat those the same. The focus should be on services. And I'm wondering if the financing isn't leading us away from what the core argument seems to be, which is the services versus leases argument. Mm. If the argument is services versus leases, I just wondered whether the objective of the paper, ignoring the actual words that are in here, is to make splitting a contract into a leases component and a services component easier or harder. What would you be trying to achieve? To make it easier to make that split? Or would you prefer to see contracts that are the bundle of both services and leases more often than not kept together?
But not leases.
Ignoring that almost for the moment, because I think the difficulty here is that we get two very different treatments depending on whether it is a service or a lease. And it seems to me that you have this, to pick up on Angus's sort of predominantly point, it feels like you almost have a cut over cliff effect at the 50% mark. It's either lots of one or lots of the other. And listening to that, it seems like the solution is actually to make it easier to do the split rather than more difficult. And I just wondered where what the direction of the paper was.
Well, I didn't write the paper, but my take on the paper is I think one wants to avoid having to split where you can. Splitting is complex. It costs money. It's particularly irritating for a company who doesn't actually think they've got a lease anyway. So I think it's more helping. What is this contract? Is this really a lease? In which case you should put it on the balance sheet. And if there is a little bit of service, you can split it out. Or is this really a service contract? And you'd have a number of indicators to help you. And I think is the intent really a financing one or not? Is one of those things. That, to me, a normal retail store, separable retail store, that's clearly a lease. I've got a lot of sympathy with a concession, you know, where in fact you don't even have a separate wall or a door, you've just got a few desks in the middle of.
Payments point.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of sympathy with that. That it's you might have a 3-year contract, but there is so much surrounded with this other than that space you've got, which might actually move along the floor or even to a different floor any time. I've got a lot of sympathy with saying, is that really a lease? Is that a financing transaction, or is it just another way of getting your products to the consumers?
We go back again, Roger, to this financing point, because you just said, is it a financing transaction?
Mm.
I don't think it needs to be a financing transaction to be a lease.
Mm.
And that's where we've got a sort of a basic disagreement with the paper.
It kind of comes back to that question that Ian asked you earlier. Is if you have the identical asset, the identical underlying agreement and control over the asset, but in one case you've paid up front, in the other case you're paying over, do you want to treat the asset differently in that circumstance?
I would, no.
So that suggests that financing is not
no, but it goes to helping to understand what is the contract. Is this really a services contract? or is this really not a services contract?
Yeah.
See, and financing is part of that thought process. It's not the major determinant, but it's part of that thought process. Why have I really got this contract? You know, am I buying drilling services, or am I paying for a drilling rig over time rather than paying for it up front? You know, that, and that's how the man on the street would think about it.
And then in that context, you would be comfortable that if I negotiated with you for the rig
mm-hmm.
and you for the services, I would get very different treatment to if I negotiated with you for the rig and you for the services and I got a single contract for that.
If you really wanted to lease a rig for 3 years and someone differently to operate it, it would be clear. Yeah.
Is it safe to say, Roger, what you're saying is that the first distinction should be, is it a service or not a service?
Yeah.
And one of the characteristics to conclude it's not a service is it's a financing. But if it's not a financing, because you're paying up front, that's not determinative.
No.
Either way, there's a service or not.
It's one of the
right.
things
and,
which help.
And that's to some degree what I thought. I thought the paper was trying to distinguish between a service and not a service. And it was using a financing as a characteristic
yeah.
of
yeah.
not a service.
That's how I understand
it. That's why I asked the question about, but I had thought real estate would be a lease, but that's
I think if you ask me, are we doing this because we want we want financing or we want space, I'd say I want space. I wouldn't think of it as a financing transaction per se, which is why I think it becomes very grey in terms of using that as such a dominant way of determining whether you've got a lease or not.
Even as an indicator, I'd have a doubt.
Liesl?
It sounds more cynical or facetious than it's meant to be. Just for a second or two, imagine we didn't have a standard on leases and we were just seeing we have a contract for something and we want to somehow account for that. I guess you would have to fall back on IFRS 15 and you would fall back on whatever you have around financial instruments or whatever. Couldn't we end up in the right corner without a lease standard? In a way, as I said, it sounds more cynical or facetious than it's meant to be. I mean, what is it, why do we have a standard on these? What is it that we want to capture? If historically we tried to capture leases because there were so many contracts where the label up front shouldn't matter. So you in many countries had for a long time contracts where it said leases and we had something like Vermietung and no one thought that even in the statistic of leases contracts, the real rental contracts would even show up. And the mixture between rental contracts and leases was blurred anyway. And we sort of knew how to account for them. So if we sort of still don't know what we want to capture, it's rather difficult.
Well, what we want to capture is company, American company Borders that went broke during the financial crisis. Half of their stores were still profitable, but they couldn't close down their unprofitable stores because they had heavy leases on them. And so in their balance sheet hardly showed any debt, whereas in fact they were heavily indebted. And that's what we try to bring to the fore. And the current standard, I don't think with current standards we would do that.
Maybe I'll just try to explain, because I think what is coming out of this conversation is at least an indication that some people think we haven't a clue what we're trying to capture, so how do we even know how to define it? And I suppose, at least from my perspective, I think we do know what we're trying to capture. I think some people disagree with that, but I think we know what we're trying to capture. I think we're trying to capture scenarios where companies, that companies, of course, always need assets to operate their business. Sometimes companies decide to buy their assets. Sometimes companies decide to lease assets over the long term. Sometimes companies decide to lease assets over the short term. And what we're trying to get at is where companies have, for all kinds of different reasons, decide they have a particular asset base that they operate, that they can make decisions about how to use these assets in their business to run their businesses and to generate revenue. And we're trying to get a better capturing of that, because what has been missing today, and what we're told is missing today, is that people can decide to operate their business using all kinds of major assets, but you don't see that capital base, the invested capital, when all leases are held off balance sheet. So I think it's important, and of course the consequence of leases is that there's missing assets, focused on assets, but consequently, there's missing liabilities. And so often the problem is that missing liabilities, missing leverage. I think our definition tries to feed off that. It says, when is the customer control the use of the asset for the period of contract? So in terms of use and how the contract is, how the asset is used in my business, when do I feel the customer is making the important decisions about how that asset is used? Versus when is the supplier actually making all of the important decisions and the customer is just making a service? So we really are trying to make that distinction. So when is the customer, in terms of its decision making about use of the asset, in a similar position as if they bought the asset? And so that's kind of, I think it's clear what we're trying to capture. Now, some of the, concern that we had when at least I read some in here, is just about if we only said then that we would capture things on the balance sheet when it was akin to borrowing, and I used, you know, and the focus on the unconditionality of payments. Because at least I think, as Steve indicated, I would anticipate that the vast majority of real estate contracts in the world today, which make up probably somewhere between 70% and 80% of all leases, I'm quite sure the vast majority of those have conditionality of payments in a sense. On this floor, in all of the retail units locally, they will just pay one payment per month, and that combines, you know, maintenance of the lifts, it combines on the retail stores, advertising campaigns. Some of those retail stores might be 95% fixed payments, maybe a small amount of variable payments. And at least the reading of this would indicate that we think, you know, that those would suddenly therefore not be leases any longer and wouldn't be captured. And I suppose it's not just real estate. At least we already know there are quite a lot of equipment leases today, especially a lot provided by manufacturer lessors, where there are servicing and maintenance included in those contracts, and where you would again just pay one amount per month. And so I am hearing a bit of course concern that some of the comments and the concern raised seems to be about the separation, because, by the way, I think the ISB is totally in agreement with you that we think it's inappropriate that payments that are being made for services would be captured on the balance sheet. And we also think it's really important that what gets captured by this contract is just what you're paying for the lease. We don't want to change service accounting. And I suppose so far and in re-deliberations, I would have thought that we've made that a lot easier. I agree, in the 2013 ED, that was made difficult. There was a hurdle because it said you can only separate if there's observable payments. Now we're saying, you know, come up with a reliable estimate, so estimate it. I totally understand there are some very complicated contracts, and I'm not saying it's always an easy exercise, but at least we are now just saying come up with a reliable estimate. I do think, I mean, we can, and I would be interested, because I think some of the commentary I've heard today is that people think that bifurcation is complex. At least I view our decision there is not creating complexity, because we simply say every time you think there's a lease, and of course there's other things, you separate and you simply use estimates. So I think the requirement is not complex. I agree the application of that perhaps in some scenarios might be complex. And I don't know whether it would be helpful to get more views and whether you think there's something more we can do in terms of that separation, you know, just around people who think maybe the bifurcation is complex. Is there something more you think we could be doing other than say we'll allow you come up with estimates?
Ken?
No, not to answer Patrina's question at the end specifically, but just to echo what she has said. I mean, I think that it is to reflect the fact that, you know, customers may want flexibility in terms of the investment they make in resources. So they either want to buy or they want to be able to sort of change their plans. They don't want to perhaps be invested for a very long period of time, but they still are, you know, have access and control over how those items are used, and I think those need to be reflected on the balance sheet, and if they haven't paid for them, you're going to have a financing transaction. So, you know, I think some of the examples that are used, it would be a case of, do you really only want a service? In which case, if you do, surely you shouldn't have the right to control how the asset is being used then, because then you're not just you know, buying a service. So to me, I really think that what Patrina outlined, I certainly concur with as being the objective, and I think it's the right approach.
Yukio?
I waited for my time. Responding to the request from you, we submitted the paper which summarized our analysis on matters of our concerns. The definition of lease and separation of lease components from service components are already discussed based on the AFRAG paper. So just I mentioned about the convergence between IFRS and US GAAP, especially in relation to the lessee's accounting model. We very much appreciate the effort the ISB and the FASB have put into this project to date. That being said, we would regret very much if the lessee's accounting model resulted in different outcomes. This is because the lessee's accounting model proposed by the ISB and the FASB seem to have a fundamental differences in view on which the model is built. For the time being, despite the fact that some issues have been identified in the existing lease standards, IFRS and US GAAP are currently substantially converged. We are afraid that the comparability of financial statements of entities from different jurisdictions would be even lowered if this project result in diverged outcomes. Also, it is questionable if diverged standards would be accepted positively by the stakeholders from all over the world. As stated in the footnote 1 of our paper, Japanese stakeholders also already expressed significant concerns over the possible divergence. So I think, you know, the I would like FASB and ISB work together to be converged. And the second, my comment, which was described in our paper about the risk definition and separation of risk components and service component is omitted, because already, you know, the significant discussion is made.
Well, at least we are converged on how to split services and leases. yes. But we, I've just spent a week in Japan, and this, I know that many Japanese constituents are very worried about the lack, the less than total convergence that we have. Passat?
I should say that out of the survey that was done, the concern about divergent models in this accounting were also firmly expressed, maybe more than on other issues, in fact.
Yeah, although I also heard, I mean, I know that, and I hear it from European sources also, but I also heard that there were many people who said, yes, of course we want convergence, but not at all costs. But that is perhaps a bit of a truism. Linda?
Well, I can't let an opportunity pass to say I'm very glad to hear others say before me that we would like convergence. So, you know, yeah, we'll just throw our hat in the ring and say that that's very important from a Canadian perspective.
Well, the paper certainly succeeded in what it was trying to do, which was to provoke a thorough discussion, and I... we are going to bring back a paper on definition, and we know there are concerns about the separation of services and leases. So if we can improve on that, we will certainly try to do so. And in the meantime, you know, concrete suggestions to that effect are always welcome. So I encourage you to continue thinking as we will continue thinking. And I think I thank Françoise and her staff for providing this input to a really good discussion.
Thank you.
Okay.